Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. Where are we today? How's life right now?
Oh, I'm home.
Oh, boy.
I threw in the towel at 18. I was like, I'm done. I'm going home after this. So,
did you remember where you lived?
Yeah, I did. I was the locks were changed, but you know, I had money to get a locksmith, and there was no problem. The dogs wanted me inside; that was enough. So,
did Dawn hear my little ding when I texted you topics?
No, she's upstairs right now. Okay. I don't think. She hasn't come downstairs right now. I'm sure you'll hear the dogs at some point. Probably run downstairs because as soon as they hear me talking, they freak out and want to be a part of the show. So.
Hey, we're all for it.
Yeah, they're welcome.
I heard you guys were ranting about Retold. I call it Retold.
Yes.
That is a great call. Yeah. Like, just very like, okay, great. Thanks for recapping stuff that's already been told.
Hey, Netflix needs content, clearly.
I
was like, we could do this. We could talk to some people and get some good, you know, some eye candy footage and just kind of rehash things that have already been. They lost me on Swamp King, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Like, that was it for me. I was like, this is the, you know, these new quote unquote documentaries that allow you to retell your past, as Joe likes to tell the story about the Michigan State football game where he broke his finger and. Or rib or whatever it was. Yeah,
Charles is not there that day. Well, you know,
playing hurt.
In case you didn't know, that was the alumni game, and when we kicked their butt. So we redeemed our college failures when I was smoking cigarettes and leading touchdown drives.
Yeah,
Charles is a good center.
I'm sure.
Aren't you the center?
Anyway, I don't know. How would you even remember that? I don't know. I when you brought it up, I was like, where was I?
It was only a quarter century ago, dude. Come on.
Yeah. Every time you bring it up, I'm like, where was I? How come I wasn't?
You were there. Yeah. I have pictures of you running around in your state news jersey, so I know you were there, dude.
Nice.
Well, that's fine. Not the alumni game, I don't think.
No. Not the alumni game. No.
No.
That's what I'm telling you.
I did. I was at one. Yeah.
Uncle Rico over here just chucking the football around. So Charles,
I was dating a photographer on our staff at the time, so I was trying to impress her. That's probably why I'm playing
in the game. So Charles, I want to start with you on this because we're going to talk about it here in a few minutes. But you know, Colts Bengals joint practice, a lot of chirping at Anthony Richardson going on, and Bengals defenders talking about how he can only throw to a spot and asking the question if he's ever going to throw the football or if all he does is put the ball down and run. What do you think of the Anthony Richardson situation heading into this year? Is there a concern that maybe he's further behind than people think heading into the season? How do you view the Richardson part of this?
No, I didn't get there, and I'm disappointed about that because I that is one of those spots that I'm fascinated by where this is going because the snapshot was so limited on Richardson. It's fascinating to me that in the lead up to the draft, we had all this consternation and we're like, you know, he's going to take all this time to develop as a passer and he's so raw and the college experience was so limited. He comes to the NFL, he plays, you know, parts of four games. And then that completely, everybody just decides that, okay, wow, great pick. He's like an MVP candidate, dark horse MVP candidate coming into this year and all these different things. And I'm like, you know, no one's bringing up like, you know, at no point is anyone like, well, what if it's RG3? What if it's there have been other quarterbacks who have come in and looked brilliant. And then, you know, there's injuries or the league catches up and it changes things. And I think people are giving the Josh Allen experience way too much credence in this situation where they're like, well, Josh Allen was so uniquely gifted as an athlete and his arm was great and his mobility was great and athleticism and he caught up to the game. It took him 3 years. Like, and it was a rough ride at times. And he played games. He played seasons. He was healthy. And so to me, when we look at Richardson, I have no idea what he's going to look like when, and you know, you bring up, Robbie, you bring up what they're saying in practice. I mean, that's what they're hearing, by the way, in their defensive meetings. You know, that's what, whatever the limited tape is, they're going to say, well, he likes to run this way. Like, you know, he only likes to go left or right, or he only likes to throw to a spot, or he stares someone down. You know, he's a one-read, you know, a one-read quarterback, can't ever get off his first read. And if he can't get off his first read, he starts to try to create after that, and that gets him into trouble with injuries because then he takes punishment. These are all things that, you know, defenders hear in their meetings. And so I think right now with Richardson, people are just betting heavy on a limited snapshot of someone who looked fun, and clearly all the gifts are there or were there that we expected, but yet we don't know how he's going to respond to a pretty significant, you know, injury and another layoff and a lack of football for a long period of time. And then once he starts to get rolling, what his tendencies are and whether or not he can even adjust. I don't think there's no way anybody can look at him and say, yeah, he can adjust. He can adjust the tendencies. He can react once he's solved and grow and become a different player who can challenge defenses or manipulate them. But I don't think we know any of that right now. All we know is the same things we knew going into the draft, is that, you know, he brings a ton to the table athletically. And now we know that he's, I would say it's fair to say he is a very large injury risk, given the fact that he did nothing but expose himself repeatedly as a rookie. And I still don't know whether he's learned not to do that.
Yeah, it's, I got to say, like, even some of the stuff, like apparently the Bengals players were like, my God, please give us a challenge. You know, and then Joey Brad is like, geez, is it that bad? But that's, well, it's going to be really interesting.
I will say this in his defense, because, okay, so I'm in Cleveland's practice, right? And I'm watching joints against the Vikings, and I think they were in like 7-on-7 or 11-on-11 red zone. And I'm watching Deshaun Watson. He does not look good. I'm like, oh my God, like this looks rough. And he's, you know, the Vikings are jumping every route. He threw a pick six. Like there was, it was rough. But as I'm watching it, I'm going, this is like every single call is a Pop Warner call right now. There's nothing complicated about what they're throwing at Minnesota's defense. The advantage is 100% on the defensive side. They're in a tight space. And basically it is, you know, one decision and go. And every defender is just sitting there going, all I got to do is just read the guy's eyes and jump it. He's not going to have time. Because, you know, if you hold it too long, it's a sack, right? That's what you hear in practice. Sack, yep. Sack, sack. And so I sat there and I'm like, this is not going to come off good. He's going to, you know, somebody's going to come out of here saying how bad he looks. And realistically, what is he geared with in this practice to make him look good in this situation? It's not much. And that's what happened. I left and I saw some people saying, you know, on social media and like other people who had been watching, who are on our side of the fence in the profession, who were like, you know, Watson looked terrible. And I just don't think in a situation like that, they were putting him in any kind of a scenario where they're going to expose anything to a defense. And I think you know, in these joint practices, that happens a lot to the quarterbacks. They're running such obvious stuff that the quarterbacks are often at a detriment in these situations. And I would argue that's why the exhibitions are still somewhat, valuable, because at least it opens the field a little bit more. I think it can be a little more challenging in exhibition games than it is on defense in some of these joint practices. So I guess that's the one thing I would say about him is, you know, it's one thing for the defense to be chirping in that situation. It's another thing when it's a wide open 100-yard field and it's sideline to sideline and, you know, maybe you're getting something a little less vanilla, not much less, but I'd be careful about how much we put into what the joint practices are. I mean, they're great, they're valuable, but you have to know exactly where the value is. And I don't think running, quote unquote, running your stuff and giving your quarterback the best opportunity to look great is realistic.
What's this spying on QBs? They're spying. Who's spying on? Yeah. Who's spying on what QBs, yeah. Charles?
So I'm going back and I'm like, you know, at the end of the trip, you're like, all right, well, I did all these notebooks. But what didn't I use? Like what? Because you end up talking to coaches and GMs in much more broad terms about just different things going on in the NFL. And one of the things, as I like kind of went back and started to look through all my notes, I had a number of conversations with whether it was GMs and or coaches, it was about, you know, the rookie quarterbacks and sort of the evaluation process. And I think it's funny, they won't, I don't think guys are really going to admit it publicly. Maybe the closest that it really came was the Top Golf event at the Chargers, where they brought all the rookies in together, the rookie quarterbacks. And then they basically admitted, I don't know if they even admitted it publicly, but it was written about quite a bit, that this whole event was basically just to watch these guys together, like all the alphas together, to see actually how the alphas interacted, who did what. And they really, when I went through Chargers camp, it was interesting talking to people there, because they really did. Like, they had almost anybody who was at the event to give you notes on how each individual quarterback reacted, who they were talking to, who they kind of sidled up to, how often they were on their phones. I almost wondered, like, was everybody in the organization on this trip watching these guys? Like, was that their assignment? I think it might have been. And I was talking to another GM, and he said to me, he was talking about looking at the rookie quarterbacks, and he admitted to me, he was like, you know, at the combine, he said something along the lines of, like, I kind of felt weird because I was always in, like, these corners watching these guys, like literally spying on them, just trying to, in every chance I got, to see them talking to different people in different situations and scenarios. And, like, what he described was kind of creepy. But he said, like, this is the part of our model that is so difficult now with quarterbacks, is we don't, there are analytics for it. We don't know how to model that into our evaluations of quarterbacks in terms of their personality. So the only way you can really do it is having them in and viewing them for a day, but then kind of following them around everywhere whenever you're in a common place, hiding and, like, watching them just to see how they react in scenarios where they think you might not be watching them. And I remember years ago when Jameis Winston was the number one pick, I think it was the Buccaneers, might not have been the Buccaneers, some team put a plant on a plane with Jameis when he was flying in to visit them. So they put somebody on the plane to watch Jameis on a commercial airline flight to see how he interacted,
good
who
Lord.
He talked to, how he treated the attendants, things like that. I think that's, it's just, it's interesting to me that this is clearly something that teams are still having, for all the data and everything that they bring to the table now, what they're still struggling to understand is how these guys operate when no one's watching. So they're trying to find opportunities that they can either create or discover where these players are like, okay, finally, I can let my guard down. I don't have to be the pre-programmed robot that the agent, you know, has sent off into the world. I can just be who I am. And they're trying to figure out, you know, what that ultimately says about the players. So
Charles,
I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Charles, Tua ripped Brian Flores earlier this week with Dan Lebatard. And it brought up an interesting discussion with us. I mean, we talked to you at the time about the Tua Flores stuff and everything that went down there. But
yeah,
in general, at large, do you think the days of the old school defensive style head coach, are they dying in the NFL? Or is that an overreaction and we're kind of in a cyclical phase where everybody wants the new up and coming guy that can connect with the quarterback now as head coach of their team? How do you view kind of the style of coaching that we're seeing in the league now, what this could mean for some of the old school guys?
I don't think it's dying. I think, you know, you look at Mike McDonald coming out of Baltimore and going into the NFC West, and nobody in the NFC West is happy about that. Like, everybody, like the other teams in, they all are like, oh, great. Like, this is the guy who's coming. They know his reputation. They know what he's done defensively as a, you know, play caller and a schemer in Baltimore. And, you know, so I think the respect, and remember, you know, and Jonathan Gannon obviously is there with Arizona, but Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay in particular are two coaches who weren't, like, really thrilled to see that guy roll into the division. And so I think when you see the minds that you respect offensively talk about a defensive coach like that, I think we are in a rotation right here. I do think there's a cyclical reaction. I don't know, given where money is going financially in the NFL, it will ever turn over completely into, like, some big wave of defensive coaches, because teams are always, given what quarterbacks make now, they're always going to think there's going to be a heavy priority of like, how can we maintain consistency in the life of our quarterback once we pay him $50 million plus, you know, moving forward. So that will always put a premium, I think, on offensive coach. Now, that said, I can tell you Zach Orr in Baltimore is a coach that I think is drawing a lot of curiosity. He's 32 years old, just turned 32 in June. He's going to be running their defense now. I think people are like, let's see what this – I mean, great player who injuries ended his career early there. And, you know, but I think he's kind of that up-and-comer that you're already kind of hearing things about with teams eyeing him to see, could he be sort of that next defensive guy in the rotation who becomes the coach we have who can solve, you know, the offensive minds that we face consistently. I don't know, again, though, just because of how money is divided up with teams and quarterbacks, there will always be a premium on potentially having an offensive head coach, especially if he's a really good play caller who can come in and, you know, ride through whatever, a decade plus with a quarterback contract. But yeah, I don't think we're not completely out of the league still being cyclical. I'm telling you right now, the wide receiver money, I just don't see that not eventually being cyclical in some sense, you know, because you can see definitely the frustration is palpable when you get out there amongst teams that are like, if they're not complaining about how shocked they are at the top end money, they're complaining about like, okay, now the secondary money in terms of number one wide receivers is automatically $25 million plus. And like you will talk, like there are people that if I told you their names, you'd be like, wow, these are the people making the statements who are like, yeah, no way, never paying that money. I can find receivers. This is dumb. Like, this is not where the value is in the NFL anymore. And like one huge name in the league was like, they better walk on water. Like he was just straight up like, if they don't walk on water, I'm not paying a guy $25 to $35 million to be a wide receiver. I'll go to the draft and I can get wide receivers. You know, I can figure it out. That's not where the special is. So you see even a situation like that where you're like, how is this cycling? Coaches are the same. I think in some ways how players get paid are the same. It'll turn and you'll see more opportunities, I think, for defensive coach.
Well, on that particular topic, you know, Flores and Tua, what did you think of what both of them said? No, that's fine. No, Robbie asked a general question, but I'm just wondering what your thought was on that, on the two different. I mean, I feel like Tua is probably getting more crap out of this. Seems like from what I'm hearing from people.
But. Yeah, well, I mean, there's the old school mentality is to be like, "Geez, how soft are you? Right. Like, really? Like, you're that beat up about, you know, like about this situation that you know? Oh, he told you." I will say that it was prevalent enough, and we talked about this when the Deshaun Watson thing was happening. I told everybody who would listen, like, this is so Flores driven. There's a reason why they're involved in this, and is 100% Brian Flores. And I felt like no one would believe that. And the fundamental pursuit was being, it was rooted at the time in Flores not believing in Tua as a starting quarterback, period. Now, I didn't know to what level he was verbalizing it. I mean, Tua made him sound like he's a bad guy. Like, he just straight up a bad guy. And, you know, that's pretty significant for a player, particularly that stature, to come out and just straight up say, hey, like, he essentially, to me, when I listened to it, I'm like, yeah, he's pretty much saying this guy tried to assassinate his career. Like that's what the level of disbelief was in him. You know, I think with Flores coming out and not walking it back was interesting, you know, and to me lends a lot of credence to what Tua is saying. And I think it did probably shake up Flores a little bit, but my big takeaway was here's another ex Bill Belichick coach trying to do things Bill Belichick does, but not doing them as well as Bill Belichick. And, you know, like failing in a way fundamentally to be, you know, Josh McDaniels was guilty of it. Charlie Weiss was guilty of it. You know, in some sense, Romeo Crennel was. There's a lot of assistants that have come out there and been guilty of not being able to replicate some of the things that Belichick ultimately does. And, you know, I think the one thing I would say, too, beyond just them trying to replicate Belichick is
Did we lose Charles?
I think we lost Charles.
Sorry about that. Oh. Fat cheeked it again. in terms of handling players with kid gloves, I will say this, it's not new. Okay. The coaches have been thinking about this for a long time. And, you know, Bill Walsh, I don't know if I've ever brought this book up, the Finding the Winning Edge book by Bill Walsh. That's like considered by Belichick, every coach you talk to, about one of the greatest franchise building models. It's a book that literally tells you, here's how to build a franchise. Here's how to deal with every decision inside the franchise. Awesome blueprint, right? In that book, Walsh says at one point, he talks about criticizing players. And he says something along the lines of, you have to know who you can criticize directly or can't, and you have to figure out a way to get to that person in the right way. And he brought up sometimes going to an assistant, whether it's an OC or a position coach, and saying, here, I'm going to call you out. I'm not calling this player out. I'm going to call you out in a meeting. I'm going to embarrass you, basically, in front of the team. And I want you to know it's not about you. I'm doing it because I want to get to that player. But I can't do it directly. I have to come in an angle that they're going to be able to absorb, that's not going to mess them up. And so they kind of cut a deal. And Walsh would go after an assistant, and then in Walsh's mind, some players would then rise to the occasion and go, man, my assistant's getting chewed out because of me. I did something. This is like I have to take ownership in this situation here. And I thought that was interesting. This is, and remember, this is going back decades, you know, 20, 30 years where Walsh is talking about this. I don't think anything's changed. I don't think it's a Gen Z thing or whatever. I think that football players have always been somewhat temperamental when it comes to criticism. I would say this is fairly outlandish and maybe the level of criticism, but don't just dump it on Tua and go, oh, he's just soft. I mean, honestly, a lot of players have not reacted well to much milder criticism than what Tua probably dealt with inside the Dolphins.
All right, Charles, last thing for you, and I just – there's a random question has come to mind that I'm interested to get your thoughts on. Number one, 1 to 10, your interest level in Tom Brady's first broadcast coming up on Fox here in a couple weeks. And number two, how good do you think he's going to be in that role after signing a 10-year, $375 million contract?
So I'm covering it. That's oh, nice. I'm definitely, yeah. That's like literally covering a game to simply focus in on how does Tom do this. I'm very interested. I think everyone's interested. And I think the bridge he has to cross, and people have discussed this before, but I think it's absolutely the number one priority, or should be the number one priority for him, is the ability to actually criticize the players that you're watching. You know, he's been critical so far in the comments that he's brought out. I talked to him at one point about the quarterback position, and I thought he was going to tell me, here's where the position is projecting out. It's in a great spot. No, he went the opposite and just ripped, you know, and he's done this now multiple times where he just rips how quarterback is being developed. And that's great, but give me a specific example. Say a name. That's my thing. And I think in broadcasting, you always walk that fine line because you go into production meetings midweek. You always ask for the quarterback, right? You sit there and you have great conversations with the quarterback. And what happens is you get onto the broadcast and you're afraid to go to basically rip it when a quarterback plays horribly and they're making terrible decisions. A lot of broadcasters just couch it. They'll say, I'm not going to rip the guy directly. I'm not going to be, you know, I'm going to be very careful about how critical I am. I want to see if Brady can do that. And I think the thing I love about the Manning cast so much is that Peyton can't stop himself. Like when you watch it live, I'm like, he gives it all away. Even if he doesn't say it, his face verbalizes,
like his hands on his head. Yeah.
100%. If he's disgusted in a quarterback, he will tell you. And at times he will say it verbally, but he will always say it emotionally. He will always say it in a reactionary way. And you know, it's a more difficult situation for Brady, I think, because it's a more traditional setup. You know, it's not just a camera on you, and it's not just, hey, grip it and rip it, do your thing. He's got to analyze, but also bring to the table direct criticism of players. I think that's what sets you apart and makes you great. Romo, to me, the diagnosing plays and telling us what's coming, that was all awesome. That was great stuff. But I think when Romo's at his best, it's when he'll get in the kitchen of a specific player and tell you exactly what a player did that he thinks is, like, you know, failing or succeeding or whatever. And it's a lot harder, I think, for people to do that nowadays with social media, because, you know, the second I rip a guy directly by name, it's going to be cut up and rebroadcast a million times, and Robbie and Joe and Charles are going to be talking about it on Thursday mornings. So
yeah,
but that's what I'm interested in seeing. So I've already heard complaints about his squeaky voice on you know, just sort of how he sounds on broadcast. That'll be fun too.
It will be. I'm sure Joe will enjoy it too. Noted Brady hater, Joe Rexroth.
I'm not a Brady hater. Okay. I'm here for this. I'm rooting for him.
All right. Charles.
You're rooting for him?
Sure. Okay. I'd like to see him do well. I don't want crappy broadcasts. He's going to be doing the best games. I don't want him to suck, right? This is for us. For all of
Joe's
us.
Joe's level of, like, rooting for individuals is a sliding scale.
Yeah, it is. Yes, it is. Charles, great stuff as always, man. Thanks for being with us, and we'll talk next week.
All right, appreciate it, guys. Have a good morning.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest on Robbie and Rex. We'll react to what Charles had to say there. I do want to get into this Anthony Richardson stuff, because some pretty interesting comments coming out of Colts camp. We'll get into that. Mm-hmm. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Appreciate Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports for being with us in the last segment. We are taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Oh, you look like you had something you wanted to say.
No, I'm just jamming out of the strokes.
All right. Every now and then you give a look, and it's like, I got something to say.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, I'm good. I'm actually reading this Nate Atkins story with some of the Bengals' defensive comments that we're about to talk about.
Yes. So, we brought this up with Charles in the last segment. So joint practices were going on between the Cincinnati Bengals and the Indianapolis Colts. And, again, it's a joint practice, so there's a limited amount of information you take from it. But apparently a lot of yapping going on between the Bengals, some members of their defense, directed at Anthony Richardson. Geno Stone, who plays safety for the Bengals, according to this piece in the Indy Star, talking about Richardson, quote, "He's just throwing the spots. He doesn't see his receivers," what he was yelling out there. Bengals defensive tackle B.J. Hill yelling at Richardson after one play, "Throw the ball, bro. What are we doing here?" And then Cam Britt Taylor saying, "Is all he does run? Like, is that all he knows how to do?" So, Bengals, not a fan of Anthony Richardson. Did not think that he was performing very well. There is concern that I've seen coming out of Indianapolis about maybe basically just throwing the question out there, is Richardson further behind than maybe most people realized or wanted to admit heading into this season, given the fact that he was pretty raw coming out of college. He did only play in parts of four games last year. And right now, is he looking to tuck it and run maybe a little bit too much rather than actually reading the defense, going through progressions, all those things? What do you make of this story from the Indy Star, what Charles had to say about it, and that concern that maybe Anthony Richardson is behind a little bit of where he's expected to be?
And by the way, on this particular day, the Colts didn't make any members of their passing game available.
Yes.
And Shane Steichen wouldn't comment. I mean, he was with the D that day, so he wouldn't comment. Well, let me just go right to Indy Ben to before I give you my take.
Indy Ben's not happy.
Indy Ben says, quote, is it just possible that Steichen isn't unveiling anything much with him in preseason games or practices like many teams do? I think that's much more plausible than just thinking he can't throw, which is ridiculous. He showed he can make great throws last season in games he played. I'll kind of agree with Indy Ben, actually, against my better judgment. There was enough last year before he got hurt where I was like, yep, I can see it. And also, we talk about the same stuff with Levis on some of these days. It's like, well, this is practice stuff, and they're working on things, and or in the preseason game, you know, it's very stripped down, and it's not a game plan, all that stuff. So I think Shane Steichen's good, and I think even last year when he was a rookie and he was super raw, they found some ways to move the football and do good things. So I'm not freaking out about this. Plus, even in the same story, in the red zone period, they caught fire and they got it back a little bit, which is what you often see. I mean, those comments from the Bengals defenders are definitely they're funny.
They're pretty funny.
You know, please throw the ball.
Throw the ball, for the love of God.
I'd like to get some work today. I'm not allowed to tackle you. Please throw the football. I just can't wait to find out with both Anthony Richardson and Will Levis. I'm not saying they're on parallel tracks right now, but in both cases, there's some things in camp that have been less than exciting.
Yes.
And there's a lot of talent in both cases, a lot of possibility. And look, another thing about this that I do wonder about, you know, that Colts offensive line has been so ballyhooed for so long, and it starts right out with sack, and these guys are giving up sacks, and it's like, those guys are getting older too.
Yep.
And that's part of – it's not just him protecting himself or your play calling. Like, is his offensive line going to be good enough? And that's still the question here.
Anthony Richardson talked about some of the conversation around him at camp to this point. Here's what Anthony Richardson had to say.
It's fascinating to me that in the lead-up to the draft, we had all this consternation and we're like, you know, he's going to take all this time to develop as a passer and he's so raw and the college experience was so limited. He comes to the NFL, he plays, you know, parts of four games, and then that completely, everybody just decides that, okay, wow, great pick. He's like an MVP candidate, dark horse MVP candidate coming into this year and all these different things. And I'm like, you know, no one's bringing up, like, you know, at no point is anyone like, well, what if it's RG3? What if it's, there have been other quarterbacks that have come in and looked brilliant and then, you know, there's injuries or the league catches up and it changes things. And I think people are giving the Josh Allen experience way too much credence in this situation. Where
that's Charles Robinson, not Anthony Richardson.
Charles, cut you off, buddy.
That's my bad. Sorry, Nick.
That's your fault?
That's my fault.
Okay.
Sorry, Nick.
I was going to yell at Nick, but I guess I'll hold off. We'll wait till tomorrow when Kuharsk can yell at him.
Miscommunication. Yeah. But that was Charles Robinson.
That was Charles.
Often, you know, his athleticism also reminds people of Anthony Richardson from time to time.
Very much. He was a great flag football center. He may not remember it, but I remember it. Oh, my goodness, what a great flag football center he was. Gator Tim says, anyone who watched Richardson in college knows he's not an NFL quarterback. I immediately answered, I totally disagree. I've said this a million times. I watched him live in Knoxville 2022. If I had to pick that day, I'm picking him number one. Now, was he consistent and all that stuff? Chip from Mount Juliet, he hasn't had a body of work. I've been telling you guys this. Well, but he hasn't had a chance to have a body of work. That's the thing. He's so talented, and it's so like, you know, he had to go. He wasn't ready to go. We all agree with that. But you have to go if you're going to get picked where he got picked, right?
Yeah.
So he doesn't have a body of work because he's barely played football, which is what makes him so fascinating.
He could be terrible. I have no idea.
Could be. But he could be great or terrible.
Right. Like the athletic traits, I mean, he's the highest tested quarterback in terms of just raw athletic ability in the history of the NFL right. Combine.
Which is amazing and still has its limitations.
Right. It has its limitations. But it does show you like why people are excited about it. Now, as we know, there's way more to playing quarterback than how athletic you are. You know, we brought up Brady. Nobody's going to confuse Tom Brady as the most athletic guy on the field. So there's way more to playing that position than just how athletic you are. And he may end up being terrible. I have no idea. I'm just saying you could see why there's intrigue there. And again, I don't take too much away from a training camp practice one way or the other. It is going to be interesting to see when games come around this year, is he too quick to run the ball? Because we talked about that last year. Like in the NFL, you can do that in college, and you can pull it down and run, and you can lower your shoulder, and that is where the athleticism comes into play, and he's got all of that. But you're still getting hit by big, fast, strong dudes in the NFL, and if you do that too much at that position, you're not going to stay healthy. So does he have kind of more of a process to his game this year that is not eliminating his running threat because you want to have it, but being smarter with it? And that's on him. That's on Steichen too.
Right. Lenny says, Anthony Richardson should have stayed in college for another year. If you're going to go in the top five in the draft, you should not stay in college. And I understand that.
From a development standpoint, I agree with you. But
you can't do it.
But when, like you said, you're getting feedback that you're going to be a top five pick. Well, hard to stay in college.
And also, look, I mean, from a development standpoint, yeah, like you have more reps in college football. So in some ways you could develop, but you may develop better with Shane Steichen as a rookie in Indy than you are with Billy Napier, right?
I think it would. I think he shouldn't have played. Let me put it to you that way. I think he would have been a perfect candidate to not play his first year.
Well, I think that makes total sense. But they were all gaga about it, and then they got him hurt.
Yeah.
They might be screwing everything up, man. I'm sorry, Indy, Ben, even though I kind of agreed with you. They might be completely botching this whole thing.
We'll
prepare yourself.
615-737-1025, our phone number. More of your thoughts on Anthony Richardson. Take your thoughts on the Titans as well. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 the game. Got some tickets to give away to the Nashville Sounds Home Run Derby X at First Horizon Park on Saturday, August 31st. Be caller number 5, 615-737-1025. You'll win a pair of tickets to the Nashville Sounds Home Run Derby X at First Horizon Park coming up Saturday, August 31st. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Chip from Mount Juliet says, at least Levis played extensively in college for good and bad offensive lines. No need to curb Richardson's anointing until more can be seen. Anointing Richardson.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure some people are. But, again, we're reading indie media reports of people being concerned. Point made to me on my personal text line, the same exact Cincinnati Bengals were not saying, throw the ball, bro, to Caleb Williams. They were like, oh, God, look at that throw. Yeah. Right? So, make of it what you will.
may not be good news for Titans fans.
Well, yeah, for week one. That's true.
Long term, may be good news for
Titans fans in 2 weeks a year. Yeah. But we get back to one of the prevailing things, which is all of it is like, please, can we have football? Let's start finding out with the actual football. But I tell you what. If you tell me right now that Caleb Williams is a markedly better quarterback in the year 2024 than Anthony Richardson, I'm not laughing at you. I'm not.
No.
I'm not dismissing you out of hand.
No.
Caleb Williams is ready to play. I mean, a lot more ready to play than Anthony Richardson was coming out.
I agree. I agree with that 100%. And look, Caleb Williams, athleticism aside, even though he's pretty darn athletic too, I think clearly has more of an upside than Richardson too. Like Caleb Williams is talked about as a generational guy.
See, but I don't know. I don't know about. I think upside is definitely high with Richardson. It's just, but it's a question of can he put it all together consistently like we haven't seen. Because I mean, the throws he can make too are absurd.
Sure.
I think both ceilings are high there, but I think Williams is just a lot more
polished.
Yeah, and also just as a – even though Richardson is a great runner, the play extender thing about – when you're a play extender, yeah, it is very much Mike Mahomes. I hate to make the comparison, but what Mahomes does is sometimes he runs and sometimes he picks up some air, but he extends plays with his eyes downfield, and you're just dead. You can't cover that. And then how many plays, huge plays in the last few years – have been a result of that. And that's what Caleb Williams seems to have a real special knack for, which I would rather have than, be able to run a 4-3 and rip off a 20-yard run whenever you want.
And how good is Levis at that? We're going to find out. I mean, wasn't a whole lot of extending of plays going on last year when you're immediately trying to dodge defensive linemen your way.
You had to start right away.
Yeah.
The play is extend the play, please. It's going to end in 0.3 of a second if you don't. I think there were some instances, though, where he did a good job of
Levis
that.
Has got good athleticism to him. Well, we've known that, right?
No doubt.
He can move. He can run when he needs to. Still needs to work on the sliding a little bit, which I'm interested to see how that goes this year. But I think playing football nowadays, you don't have to have that skill. Like, Brady never had that skill, but Brady, great player, and a great player across all eras. So it's not like you can't do it different ways, but I think more and more you're going to see quarterbacks coming into the league that's a part of their upbringing. It used to be, you've got the pocket quarterback or you've got the scrambling quarterback, and rarely did you have the guy that was just floating around back there and athletic enough to move, but his first look wasn't always just to take off running. I think, being coached – to get away from pressure and evade pressure but keep your eyes down the field, that's a big part of playing the game nowadays. And it's going to – if you can do that at an elite level, you're going to make a lot of plays in the NFL.
Well, I think one of the intangibles for Tom Brady that you didn't really know until he started playing games is even though he definitely was not a good athlete, he had a very good feel in the pocket.
Yes.
He had a very good feel for sidestepping, extending, and then making throws. So it's still kind of the same idea, just not as – it wasn't as fun to watch as like what Caleb Williams did the other day against the Bengals, but – it was pretty effective. There's a positive comment about Tom Brady. Ethan from Lawrenceburg, who thinks I just hate him. Don't hate him.
I mean, the evidence would suggest that hate is a strong word. Dislike.
I don't dislike. I mean.
Annoyed.
I think it's weird.
Disrespect.
Like, those pictures of him from like 20 years ago and then recent, and it's like, is this like some weird concoction of like Botox, HGH, and like.
Well,
kale?
It just shows you.
Like, what is happening with this dude?
If you got a lot of money, you can look pretty good.
Well, that's true.
I'm just saying.
Like, his face, like the shape of his skull changed. I'm not saying it's like Barry Bonds, whose head doubled in size, but kind of weird.
I'm going to see Barry Bonds this weekend.
That's right. That's exciting.
I'll say hi to him for you.
Yeah.
Jim Leland sends his regards.
Say hi to Porth, too.
Yes, I will.
Jim Leland. Is Jim Leland going to be there?
I have no idea.
Smoking a heater? Love that guy.
No idea. No, I mean, Richardson is near the top of just NFL interest at large in terms of what I'm interested to see this year. You know, obviously locally we're going to focus a lot on the Titans, and that's at the top of the list. But you know, not too far down the list is going to be Richardson and how he plays. Number one, like, can they keep him healthy? Can they keep him upright? And if they do, if he's got 17 games worth of sample size this year, what does that look like? Right now, I don't know. Like, he played in parts of four games. I think his completion percentage was like 59.5, which is not good in the league. So what does that look like over the course of a 17-game season? I'm really interested to see.
Another Gator grad saying they deliver, finish the season healthy. And that may be true. And that may be ultimately his downfall. It's probably as big a concern as anything. Good point by David. He said, I feel like Russell Wilson was great at that. You know,
yes.
Extending plays really great.
He was.
It's really interesting to think about him. It was not long ago. We were on this show saying, is he the best player in the NFL? And now it's like, I don't want him as my starting quarterback. It's kind of interesting. I think about, you know, Wilson and Kirk Cousins come out the same time, second-round pick, fourth-round pick, and Wilson was a star, you know, and all that. And it's kind of like it's almost like the tortoise and the hare. Cousins is actually, I mean, I'd rather have him as my quarterback right now. That guy can't move at all. He's about the same athleticism as Tom Brady.
Hey, Vince could extend some plays. You just never knew where the ball was going after that.
But. BY?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Wow.
Sometimes it ended up on the money. Sometimes it ended up in sixth row with the shoulder pads.
Hey, back when he was a rookie here, you know, out of market, I watched every Titans game I could because I was so sure he was going to be great.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that performance against USC, all-timer.
PK in tomorrow.
We just don't know. PK is in tomorrow.
Joseph on mic one. PK in tomorrow. I'll see you guys on Monday.
Watch out. All right, have fun, buddy.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Chase and Big Joe up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3 The Game.